RN. abc.net.au/radio national.
And good morning, Natasha Mitchell with you for Life Matters. It's Friday, it's Talk Back, it's good. We're on the move for love or money this morning. We want to hear about the big geographical moves you've made in your life and why. Perhaps it was a case of escaping the life you know in an attempt to lead a life you'd like. How far would you travel for new job prospects or a new opportunity? Some parts of Australia really can't get enough workers at the moment. In others, there's not enough work to go around. And in fact, the Productivity Commission is currently looking into this movement of people for work across town or right across the country. Their definition of mobility includes everything from long-distance commuting to selling your house and leaving town altogether. Does this describe your working life? Of course, you might have moved for reasons other than work too. Love, adventure, a stint overseas. Have you left a capital city to work remotely or the comforts of a country town for the big smoke? What were you hoping for? How did things work out? We want to hear from you this morning. Some great stories coming in on our Facebook page too. Please keep them coming. Give us a call, 1300 22 55 76 1300, call RN. The SMS 0418 226 576, so you can text us instead if you can't get to the phone to call us. And if you're in WA or the Northern Territory, if you're in South Australia or the Northern Territory, call right now, 1300 call RN. And if you're in WA, you can call if you're streaming us live. Otherwise, the listener feedback line 0283 1430 is the number to call. And of course, you can get in touch via our webpage or Facebook page and on Twitter at RN Life Matters. My first guest is Professor Richard Sweet. He's a professorial fellow at the Graduate School of Education at the University of Melbourne. He's recently been really looking into how mobile we are as workers, relocating and changing jobs or changing occupations as the case may be. And Richard, welcome.
Hello, Natasha. Thanks for having me.
It seems that we're actually very mobile as Australians compared to some other countries.
Yes, there's not much evidence that we've got a problem with workers changing their jobs. It's probably about the third highest rate in the OECD. And despite the common perception that the Americans are much more likely to move from one state to another than most other countries, the limited evidence that we've got available suggests that geographically we're probably a bit more mobile even than the United States and Canada. So,
how mobile are we? Give us
about 10% of the workforce change their job each year. Of that, about 2/3 change not just their job, but their occupation or the industry they work in, and maybe another 3-5% of the population make a significant geographical shift. So, and we've also got evidence that people commonly experience quite major changes in the nature of the job that they have. And that's a different type of mobility, if you like. It's a form of psychological mobility. And so if you added all of those percentages up over, say, a five-year period, you've got a pretty big slice of the population that is changing their job, their occupation, their industry, where they live, how they do their job. Mm. We've got a very dynamic and flexible labour market in Australia.
And so we could think of that as a good thing or less good thing. How do you frame it?
Yes, I mean, my view about labour mobility research is that it's very schizophrenic. And you know, classically, economists, for example, will say, well, look, you know, it's good for workers to stay in their jobs because if they stay in their jobs, all the evidence says that they develop more skills, they get more experience, and their wages go up. Mm. On the other hand, they'll say, you know, there's this long tradition of thinking about creative destruction in the economy. It's good for workers to move because that means that when new products come online, when new industries develop, then labour is flexible enough to move. I remember in the early 1990s being involved in vocational education bodies at the national level, and we were quite schizophrenic there. I mean, on the one hand, we were introducing policies to encourage employers to train so that workers would stay. And on the other hand, we were developing a national qualification system designed to make sure that workers weren't penalised if they were plumbers and went interstate. Mobility is good if you leave your job in order to get a better one, but it's not very good if you get sacked and you don't want to be sacked.
So there's many facets to this, and we'll come to you. I think you're a bit sceptical about whether government policy has a place here to drive that, but let's come to that in a tick. Let's get a sense of who is more likely to move, both physically, geographically, and between jobs, because people have attempted to interrogate you have interrogated the demographics there.
Yeah, the evidence makes sense. Intuitively, you'd suspect that you're more likely to move if you're young, and the evidence says that job changing falls as you age. You're more likely to move if you haven't got a mortgage, and all the evidence supports that. If you're single, you're more likely to move. People are more likely to move if they don't like their job.
Good start.
That's right. And the evidence says that when people do move jobs, on balance, if they move voluntarily, their job satisfaction increases, they use their skills more, and so in that sense, it's pretty positive.
And sometimes that's less about the actual job you're moving to and as much about feeling empowered, about taking your own situation in your own hands. It's kind of taking control.
Oh, yes. I mean, that resonates with me because many years ago I left the first job I had after I graduated because I didn't like the way I was being treated, and I felt so much better after I'd shifted and found a new job.
Stated your case. But also it's about what skill levels you have too, and I gather that that people who have professional training, professionals, often are less likely to move. They might move jobs, but they might not. They might move locations. They're less likely to move jobs.
They are less likely to change to a new occupation or a new industry. In other words, doctors will stay in the health industry. Teachers will stay in the education industry. Plumbers stay in construction. And that's partly because they've invested a lot of time, effort and energy in getting their qualifications and the salary that's associated with that. But it's also because they have this sense that rather than being an employee of McDonald's or Qantas, they are first and foremost a doctor or a plumber. And that sense of occupational identity, as the psychologists call it, stops them thinking about changing who they are. So it's all of these sorts of moves are very much bound up with who you think you are and who you are and who you want to be.
It's the Life Matters Friday Talkback, and my guest is Professor Richard Sweet. We're talking about the big move. What big moves have you made in your life for jobs, for love, for occupation, perhaps for just a total life change? You've had enough and you want to move on and try something different. Take a risk. 1300 22 55 76 1300 call RN is the number, and you can also text message us 0418 226 576. Let's take some calls. Yolanda in Victoria. What happened
to
you?
How are you?
Very well. What happened to you?
Well, I've got a bit of an interesting story to tell. I'm actually from Queensland, but moved down to Victoria thinking, I moved down to Melbourne years ago, back in 2000, thinking I'll just be here for a few years and go home. And I got sick and got stranded. And then some years later, was facing homelessness. So I managed to pull it out of my bottom and bought a house in regional Victoria. And within 3 years, I've offset that and set up a business and bought a commercial building.
Wow. So it took something quite extreme for you to make a move that made a difference.
Oh, yeah. Fear is a wonderful motivator.
I think we might explore that a bit further, and it worked out for you in the end. Yolanda, thank you.
Thank you.
Helen, in New South Wales, you've got a memory here from the 70s.
Yeah, I was involved with two guys in the early 70s. Couldn't make up my mind as to who I wanted to marry. So my sister was getting married in New York. She'd met a serviceman on R&R from Vietnam. So off I went, worked and lived in New York for a year. More city than sex for me, unfortunately. But number two hung on in there, and I met up with him in London, where he worked for IBM. And we worked there for 3 years, and then one day he came home and said, "Oh, we have to live in Denmark for a couple of years." So off we went to Denmark. My daughter was born there. 2 years turned into three. One day he came home and said, "Oh, we have to live in the south of France for a couple of years."
So
off we went to the south of France. Daughter starting school at the age of three. Me skiing twice a week in the ski fields, which were only about an hour away. So for us, as a composition my daughter wrote when she was about 6 years old, IBN meant important businessman.
Right.
So that was my wonderful, wonderful life. And then one day he dragged me back to Australia, kicking and screaming, but I've had a wonderful life here too.
Yeah, well, it's certainly, I mean, each time you upend, it can be fun, but it can also be a challenge in terms of making new connections.
Even going to the supermarket was a language lesson. It was fabulous.
Helen, thanks for that. And I want to read a Facebook comment from Marisa, or Marissa. "I call myself an accidental expat. For the last 20 years, my husband and I have been trotting the globe due to his work commitments with the Italian Foreign Service. We moved to Argentina on the eve of the economic crash in 2001. We moved to Cuba when Fidel fell sick, and I worried that our belongings, which were packed into a container and being shipped to Havana, might never be unpacked if he were to die. 7 years later, he's still around and we're in another country. We have a 13-year-old son who is as comfortable speaking English with an Aussie accent as he is speaking Spanish with a Cuban or an Argentinian accent, depending on who he's talking to. A true global nomad he is. I wouldn't change my life with anyone else's. It's not all rosy, but the benefits and opportunities far outweigh the disadvantages. A stimulating lifestyle." Beautiful story, I thought. I wanted to read that one out. It's the Life Matters Friday Talkback. Liz in Tasmania.
Hello.
You migrated to England with a new hubby.
No, from England.
From England. Beg your pardon.
Yeah, from England to Australia in 82. We'd been married 5 years. I had a son from a first marriage. I'd had three homes as a kid. We'd gone from London to the South Coast. Then I had three homes with my first marriage. And since I met my husband, I've put together 17 family homes because he hasn't stopped moving.
Whoa. Has that been fun or exhausting?
Both. And challenging, trying to educate. We had a fourth son in Hobart, trying to educate four boys across three states of Australia and up and down and round is very challenging. I actually am back in Hobart now after 20 years away. We're 2 years back here and I consider Tassie home. We were always coming back.
There comes a point, though, and this has certainly been the case in my life, where you just can't face packing another box for a while.
Absolutely, yes. The last few moves, I said to my husband, "Okay, if you want to do it again, you've got to do the packing."
That's right.
And he did.
There comes a point. Liz, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
I think it's Waltrout, is that right? Hello there.
It is indeed. Waltrout is my name.
Hi there. You left Austria 30 years ago.
Yes, I left Austria when I was 26, and I left because I had this deep belief that there was a purpose in life for me to find the job I really was good at, which I did find in Australia, and I became a milliner, and also found my great love, which I married, and now I am home-based in Melbourne, but right now I'm traveling in Queensland, which I do 3 months of the year. I travel all around Australia and have a purpose-built car filled with hat-making material, and I teach people in remote communities who have no access to millinery and amazing headwear, and I'm on my way from Charters Tower to Julia Creek.
Oh!
My truck.
The move continues.
The move continues, and I move around all year round, and it's for me incredibly touching to have people so interested and having that ability and the possibilities and the gift which comes back to me with the skills, the farmers women and people in remote areas and what they are capable of doing and how talented they are and how many driveways I'm allowed to sleep in and the properties I see. And it's just amazing
what a life have
brought to me. Yeah.
What a life. Thank you so much for the call. Teaching millinery and hat making in remote regions. Much appreciated. Thank you. I mean, Richard, adventures abound, really.
Yeah, what a wonderful lot of gypsies they are. Isn't it fantastic, isn't it? Yeah. And, I mean, what this illustrates, I think, you know, each of those four calls shows that most geographical moves are really done for reasons other than work.
I was just going to say, it's about personality too, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people do it for family reasons and personal reasons and self-fulfillment, and then the job comes afterwards, except as in the last call when the lady moved to Australia for really quite deliberately work-related reasons. So that most of the sort of mobility we see is really not driven by the nature of the labour market and economic opportunities.
It's taking leaps of faith, personal leaps of faith in a sense, and the job will come next. But I think that's a personality thing as well. Some people really are happy to explore that kind of realm of risk. Others are less so.
There are risks indeed, and the evidence says that if you've got a job and you move interstate, the chances of becoming unemployed rise. And part of the reason for that is that it takes a while to settle in. Most people find their jobs through networks and friends and contacts. And then if you move interstate, of course, you lose a lot of those. And so there are risks associated with taking that, as you call it, leap of faith.
Leap of faith, so to speak. Lee writes on our Facebook page, "We've just wound up the business, sold everything we own, pulled the kids out of school, embarking on homeschooling around Australia. Why? Because we want to move, but we're not sure whether to live in Israel or Melbourne, so we'll take a break. Have been living in Byron Bay for 18 and a half years. They removed all their material possessions, and they want to know what is important. So moving on, adventures abound. So we're on our Friday Life Matters Talkback here. Natasha Mitchell with you. Professor Richard Sweet is also with me. And we're talking about the big moves we make, the big geographical moves for work, for love, for play, for adventure, for risk-taking. Want to hear your stories this morning, 1300 225 76, or 1300 call RN. Tell us why you moved and what it was like for you. I want to bring in another guest now, psychologist Dr. Gordon Spence. He's an executive and workplace coach with the Sydney Business School at the University of Wollongong. Welcome, Gordon.
Good morning.
Moving. I mean, is there a sense, do you think, increasingly so, that you need to be open to moving between cities, between countries, to progress professionally these days?
Yeah, I think that's fairly true. I think people often feel a bit of pressure to be leaving those options open. So, in some of the work that that we do in the area of business and executive coaching, people will often come to a point where they're, you know, wrestling with some of these issues, and that sometimes becomes the focus of conversation and work to help people to clarify what they're going to do next and why they're going to do it.
When you're talking to people who might be thinking about, say, changing jobs, what sorts of things do you get them to consider, Gordon?
Well, one of the things I get them to consider, it's interesting what you were talking about. Richard was just talking about the implications of moving interstate and how, you know, that removes us from our kind of established social networks, and then that can actually have, you know, sort of short-term negative consequences. So one of the things to be considering is obviously, you know, what are the risks associated with making that change? And I think that there's almost a romanticism there's an excitement that's associated with picking up sticks and moving on. And
sure, I think, is. You've
you
got
know,
it.
And when people,
the fantasy.
Yeah, and when people get taken by that idea, you know, sometimes the job is to provide people with a bit of a sounding board and a bit of an objective second voice just to help them sort of think through what the pros and cons of that decision might be.
But you can never really fully anticipate what the cons might be, and in some way that's part of the frisson of making a move, isn't it? You've only got one life.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's no bad thing in and of itself. I think, you know, being able to do something like that and, you know, deal with the challenges and obstacles, you know, develops, a self-reliance and a self-sufficiency that's kind of it's quite good. Mm. It's actually one thing that I developed sort of fairly early on when I went and did my big overseas experience when I was in my early 20s for a couple of years. I came back feeling much more self-reliant, and that was because you're dealing with challenges challenges in new environments and novel things that you'd never encountered before.
So that's right, testing yourself.
It's a bit different, though, when you've got a family and, you know, you've got responsibilities, etc. Obviously, that ratchets up the pressure.
Well, I think you've just made a big move yourself.
Yeah, that's right. A couple of years ago, my wife and I decided that we would, as you say, pick up sticks and move from Sydney to the Central Coast. So whilst I work for the University of Wollongong, I live on the Central Coast, which is a bit of an odd one, I suppose.
Now, why did you decide to do that? What was it about your life that compelled you to... Well, you're a commuter now, which has its own challenges.
Sure. Well, the major factor for us was thinking about our two young children. And prior to them getting to school age, we just made a choice. We thought, well, we love Sydney, but it's not necessarily where we want to bring up our kids. Both my wife and I grew up in smaller cities, smaller centres, where we could get on a bike and ride around the neighbourhood without too much of a concern. Yeah. And we wanted to be able to do that for our kids. So it was a very deliberate, intentional decision to do what we did.
Yeah, get out of the rat race. Good move. Good move. Which says, actually, that we move, as Richard mentioned and as our callers have indicated, we move for much more than work. But just to come back to work, I was interested to note that you actually think people, when they're thinking about a move, a job move, it might be a job and a geographical move, a skills audit actually is a helpful thing to do at that juncture.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, when people, particularly when people are feeling a sense of career dissatisfaction, and that might be because they're dissatisfied with their, you know, the sort of the level of work-life balance, if you will, or just because they, you know, they're dissatisfied with the role or they're lacking a sense of meaning and purpose, I think there can be a temptation to want to make a geographical move. And I put that in inverted commas, because when I talk about a geographical move, I'm talking about, yes, it might be a move to a different centre and a physical relocation, or it could just be a geographical move in terms of moving between organisations. And one of the first things that I do and I talk to students about is to give people the opportunity to also have a think about how their skills and talents and abilities might be able to be used and expressed within the current organisation or company that they're in. Because there are sometimes ways in which people can use, you know, undiscovered strengths or unutilised strengths in ways that might be really valuable and important to their current employers, but they just haven't explored what those opportunities might be.
Yeah.
So it's often about giving people that chance to have a think about, well, what have you got to offer? What strengths do you use on a regular basis, and what areas might you be able to use those strengths in within your current organisation without necessarily creating a change that may or may not lead you to nirvana?
Yeah, it's not always you have to create a blank slate. And I guess people get in a panic when their situation isn't right. They think, well, I've just got to get out.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Rather than knowing that they might be able to nurture some creative possibilities in their current situation.
That's right. A good example of that, particularly for you know, employees, managers, leaders who have lots of skills, lots of experience, lots of knowledge, is to, you know, perhaps look at just, you know, using that experience in different ways. So taking on internal or informal mentoring roles, for instance, and helping people within their organisation develop that may not be something they've done a lot of. And there can be some satisfaction associated with using knowledge in that way. So, you know, there's lots of different possibilities. It's just a case of, you know, trying to get, as you say, creative around that.
Look, terrific to speak to you, Gordon Spence. Thank you very much for joining us on our talkback this week.
My pleasure.
Dr. Gordon Spence, he's a psychologist and executive and workplace coach based at the University of Wollongong at the Sydney Business School. And it's Friday, it's our Life Matters talkback. Have you or would you make a big move for work, perhaps? Pack up and relocate to a new city or region? Have you done that? How'd it go? Was it a risk? Did you take a risk? Perhaps you were a veteran job changer while living in the same location. You change your job every year or every few years, maybe even more than that. Tell us your story. But perhaps you've made a move for so many more other reasons. Love, lust, Who knows? Just a change. Maybe you've just wanted a change in life. On the SMS, which is 0418 226576, Carla has written, I moved from Canberra to Brisbane for a uni undergraduate degree, then back to Canberra for postgrad study. I wonder how many people move for education. Yes, indeed. Love to hear from you. 1300 225576. Heather in Queensland.
Yes, good morning.
When you were 48, you were a single mum. You made a whopping big move.
Yes, I just got a feeling my daughter was just left school, and I just felt that life was empty. I suppose, what do they call it, the empty nest syndrome or something. Mm. And I'd always wanted to do, I'd seen programs on the TV about, you know, places like Ethiopia and that, where there's terrible trouble going on. And I'd always had a feeling I would like to do voluntary work, but at the time felt I just wasn't ready for it. I didn't know what I would be able to do. So I had a sort of a moment at work one day, and suddenly I just thought, I'm going. I had no money. And then I got all sorts of things happened, and money just sort of started to appear. And I went to...
We like that.
Never happened to me before. I went to a place in Scotland called Findhorn and put in 6 months there, just sort of sorting myself out, I suppose. And the result of that was that I went to India to do some voluntary work there. And it was difficult at first. Nobody wanted me. They said, well, you're more of a hindrance than a help because yeah. you're not a nurse, you're not a doctor, you're not an engineer.
What can you do for us?
What can you do, you know? Yeah. One fellow actually said to me, people like you, you know, have these good notions, but you just get in the way. So I thought, well, okay. So
That's a helpful confrontation. What did you end up doing?
I contacted the Missionaries of Charity in London because that's where I was at the time, and had a yarn with them, and an hour or so later they said, well, when can you go? So I ended up about 8 months later in Darjeeling, where I'd arranged to work at their orphanage there. But when I got there, it wasn't actually there I was meant to go. It was at a village some way down. It was about halfway up.
So you ended up, and where did you end up?
It was a place called it was an orphanage called Tindharia, that was the village, rather. And I worked there for a few months, and that was just soul-destroying. Children just died. They were taken in. They were children from single mothers mostly. And there was a big judgment thing going on with nuns about that.
So, I mean, was that the risk that you took worth it for you in the end?
Yes. And I knew I had to go. I knew that if I didn't, I would regret it all my life.
Yes.
And I felt that somewhere there was a reason, but I couldn't have told you what. I just knew I had to go.
Heather, it's a wonderful story. Thank you. And I think people will be listening going, I just might take that leap myself.
Well, I went for 6 months and didn't come back for 10 years.
For 10 years. There you go. Thanks, Heather, very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodness me, I wonder if that's a story that you can relate to. 1300 225576, 1300 call RM. We're talking big moves today. Milton in Queensland. Hi there. You moved from Sydney to WA, then I think back to Sydney, then found some love somewhere else.
Yeah, I've been to China a couple of times as well. Yeah, the first one was for adventure to Western Australia. A few friends were riding cross on bicycles, so we had a great time. And then I followed my first wife back to Sydney, because she was trying to escape from me, wise woman. But so it was amicable for a while, but it still didn't work out, so that was life. But in Sydney, I found another attractive young woman who I chased up to, well, actually I moved up to Brisbane more successfully to marry. And she had a great idea of going to China. So we went and toured over there in Shanghai, and then she got a promotion to Beijing. And then we came back to Australia for health reasons, and then we went to Qingdao, up on the north coast of China. Oh. So wonderful experiences meeting incredible people.
And it sounds like it was because your heart was open, literally.
I'd like to think so, yeah. Yeah, so, and there's, for me, there's been wonderful experiences because of those moves. I mean, also, you know, I've lost a lot of friends along the way. But because I'm not good at keeping in contact, despite email, you know. But, and so now we are, now we've just moved up the range for a job from Brisbane. In fact, I'm sitting on the roof because that's the only place we can get a reception. And
Milton, thanks very much for that. Thank you.
Okay.
And that point about big moves dislocating friendships and relationships is a good one, I think. Thanks, Milton, for making it, because that's a very common experience. People don't stay in touch. Sometimes you've got to make the effort. Sandra in Victoria, you were at 40, I think, left the kids in the house and went overseas. Why?
I did. I've always wanted to be a volunteer, and at the age of 40, I was a single parent. I brought up my kids, left them the house and the mortgage, and I went to Australian Volunteer for my first assignment.
You left them with the mortgage?
Yep.
Good one. Where'd you end up?
Oh, I went to first place, I went with Flores, and then over the next 20 years, because I came back and went over, I worked with the UN in East Timor. I was part of the advance party going into East Timor, Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands, Cambodia, Liberia. I've just come back from South Darfur in November of last year. And moved into my house in Romsey. This is a place I wanted to come to. I bought it about 3.5 years ago. And that dislocation is so true. And I said I'd be home by 60. I turned 60 last November. And I want to write, but I need a job because of the job that I've done. One doesn't accrue superannuation, so I haven't been able to secure a part-time job so I can get on with what I wanted to do. So my life plan sort of got a hiccup at the moment.
It takes you took risks, though, and that sounds like a lively life and a very powerful life. Sandra, thanks for the call. And Guy in New South Wales, you want to comment on moving and the destabilisation that can have on families. I think that's a very important thing too, as a member of a family who moved a lot.
Hi, Natasha and everyone. Hi. Yeah, look, I work as a relationship therapist in particular, but I see individuals as well. And my first client 20 years ago was someone who had emigrated from the UK to Australia. But I work with a lot of people who find there's an incredible pressure gets put on relationships, but also families. So someone might move with the romance, that they might be single, they might move overseas or even interstate, and they get there and they meet someone. And they're faced with this dreadful dilemma in some cases of, do I stay for the relationship, recognising that there are profound cultural impacts of that, even for someone from the UK. It's such a difference between here and there, and they have to deal with what's that going to mean in the long term. Do we bring up our kids in this country or that country? All these kinds of things that I think if people considered before they sort of jumped on the bandwagon of an exciting looking job and really thought through some of the implications, they might be just a little bit slower to go.
Yeah, Guy, thank you for making that point very much. And in fact, I'll come to Professor Richard Sweet on that one. You know, this is the kind of hidden story, isn't it? If you're unemployed in urban and eastern Australia, you're sometimes told to move to areas where there are skills shortage, to move to Western Australia to be part of the mining boom, for example. But there's this social, personal dislocation that comes with that story.
Yes. Let me sort of answer this, I suppose, in a personal way rather
Please.
Than through the research literature. I mean, I'm somebody who made a big move at one point. We moved to Paris and I worked there for 7.5 years.
This is with the OECD.
Yes, yes, to work for the OECD. Now, we'd resisted when, in previous years, I'd had offers to go to Melbourne, which we knocked back. Kids were at school, they had friends, they didn't want to move. They were teenagers, their hair was down to the middle of their back, they'd just seen Romper Stomper, they thought they'd be thumped when they walked down the streets of Melbourne. So no, they weren't going, thank you very much. when the offer to move to the OECD arose, of course our family circumstances were different, they left school. My wife said, look, I'm not sure whether I'd want to give up friends, family, social networks, a job, income. What I'll do is come over for 6 months and test it out.
Good on her.
And she did, and absolutely loved it. And then as a result of that, came back. But, of course, came back not as somebody who had the option of going back to a job and friends, but as somebody who'd cut the ties. And that adjustment was not an easy one. Mm. Even with what we thought was very careful preparation and testing out, the adjustment process took about 12 months. Of course, by that stage, she absolutely adored it. She developed new friends and
but it takes time. It takes time.
Mm. And I think that, if we wanted to talk about what governments can do to facilitate mobility, and I'm not sure that necessarily is the best approach to take, but I do think that rather than focusing upon economic incentives, I mean, after all, if the miners can't get people to move to the Northern Territory with the huge salaries that are on offer, a bit of a tax break's not going to make much difference. But policies to give families support in that process of moving, and we could talk about a range of ways you can do that. It seems to me that that's the much more sensible type of approach. I mean, the sorts of things that Gordon works through when he's acting as an executive coach to help people make career changes are the sorts of things that governments can
pay
and
attention to.
Yes, that's
and
right.
companies who are trying to provide the carrots to pull people into those
do.
Locations.
Yeah, the good companies do, of course, yeah.
They think of people as a sort of a whole person with a complete life
and a
outside of
that's
work.
Right.
That's right. So it's a good point in our Life Matters Friday talkback to bring in our next guest, Alyssa Finlay. Is married to a rural doctor. She was a professional ballet dancer. They made the move to Moree. Her husband was a futures broker. He's now a doctor, and she's a ballet teacher. Welcome to the show, Alyssa.
Thank you, Natasha.
Now, what a move this was.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you met, he was a futures broker, Scott, your husband,
yes.
With a bank in Sydney. You were a professional ballerina. Chart that journey Sydney to Moree for us.
Yes. He decided that long-term in futures was not going to be a very rewarding and fulfilling sort of career, and really felt the need to retrain as a doctor. So I supported him through medical science in Sydney, and then we moved to Brisbane where he did medicine, and continued training up there as a registrar and an intern, etc. And then he came to me one day and he said, I really feel the need to be a GP. And I said, oh, okay, great. And he said, a rural GP. And I said, what? You know, moved from Sydney to Brisbane. Now we're going to move to the country. So that came as a bit of a surprise. It was certainly out of my comfort zone. But we decided that we'd give it a go for a year and see what happened. So from there, we moved to Stanthorpe and Armidale, Toowoomba, and now Moree, as he went through various training processes for general practice, obstetrics and anaesthetics.
Okay, so that's the doctor's story.
Yes.
But not many opportunities in Moree for a professional ballerina.
No, I have been teaching ballet for about 20 years now, so it's amazing. As soon as Scott got a position somewhere, I managed to either get in contact with a local dance teacher or someone like that in order to find work. But here in Moree, there wasn't a dance school at the time, so I have set up the Moree School of Dance, and it's grown from about 30 students 5 years ago to about 160 students now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Thank you.
But that would have taken some heartbreak, did it? I mean, to leave a career, or were you ready to do it? Or I mean, these are the sort of tensions, particularly when couples have to move together and one person's desire doesn't match another person's.
Indeed. I think I've been very fortunate in that my career is easily movable, and I think in a country town, the arts are so greatly appreciated by the community that we've been really welcomed with open arms, and it's lovely to have the support of the community. So when we have a ballet concert, I have wonderful helpers who paint backdrops and sew and provide all sorts of assistance. So I find that very rewarding, actually, in a community like Moree.
I mean, certainly when we think about the kind of push to get doctors, or the pull to get doctors to move to regional areas, a lot of people have young families, and that doesn't seem to be the right thing for them to do. But so how have you navigated that with your kids? Because you've got a young family.
Yes, we have three children. I think it's actually helped in many regards, because when you have young children, you're involved with the school or the preschool or after-school activities. So I think that's a great way to meet people. So I think, in a sense, that's definitely helped, actually. They, of course, had to readjust, and we all had to say goodbye to friends and that sort of thing, but it's worked out really well in the long run, actually.
Very different living in a small town. I think your husband says he likes to live in a place where you meet the people who grow the wheat for your bread and the cotton for your socks.
That's correct.
What about you?
Yes, it is. It's fabulous. I notice when it rains here, I say to some of my ballet students, oh, I get, you know, your families will be really happy about this. And I say, yes, Mum will be really excited. You know, it means such wonderful prospects for the farming community out here. So, yes, going to visit friends on a cotton farm and watching the children play in amongst all the cotton bales and everything, I find it quite exciting. You also get some pretty incredible equipment driving around the streets, big tractors and cotton pickers and that sort of thing. So I think the agricultural side of Moree is a wonderful benefit that our children are growing up and experiencing.
If there were other people who were in this situation as you are, and they certainly are, what would you say was the biggest challenge that you had to overcome?
I suppose just having faith that it would work out. You don't know what the future holds. It was a leap of faith into the unknown. But I think, you know, we've discovered things about ourselves. You have to be open-minded and open-hearted, as you said before. But I think I've discovered strengths that I didn't know that I had.
Like what?
Well, I think if I'd have been back in Sydney and someone had said, oh, you know, could you teach this hip-hop dance or something that was not in a classical ballet style that I'd been trained in, I'd sort of say, oh, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. But here in Moree, that opportunity came my way, and I thought, well, I've got to do this because there's no one else to do it, and it's been thoroughly rewarding.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yep, you've got to muck in and try every genre
Absolutely.
Of dance. And are you going to stay in Moree?
We are indeed, yes. We've made the decision to be committed long-term, and our eldest child has actually gone to boarding school recently, which was not initially what I had planned. We came with a 5-year plan, but we feel a great sense of commitment to the town, and I think if we did try and leave, they'd be chasing the doctor and the ballet teacher.
Well, especially if you've got 160 kids in your care.
That's right. I have a lot of disappointed
teaching them hip-hop and ballerina.
Indeed.
And everything besides. Alyssa Finlay, lovely to talk to you this morning. Thanks so much for sharing your and Scott's story with us.
My pleasure.
Terrific. Alyssa Finlay there. Ex-Sydney professional ballet dancer, now a ballet teacher running the Moree Ballet School or Moree Dance School. Can't remember which one. Let's take some calls. Zoe in Northern Territory. Hi there. Lovely to have you on the show.
Oh, hi. Hello.
You moved to wonderful Alice Springs?
Yes, yes, in 2007. And
why?
Well, we've been living in Melbourne. I'm from England originally. Met my husband in Geelong. We lived in Melbourne for 7 years. And life was pretty stressful. And unfortunately, I had two miscarriages during that time. And we thought, you know, we really want to have children. Let's get out the rat race and let's move to Alice Springs, and where I was so lucky to conceive afterwards and have a baby. So it was a really good outcome. After 2 years, I think we're living here, we had our first child. So, yes, it was fantastic.
Took a risk for a baby, Alice Springs. Good for fertility, it seems.
Yes, it is, yes.
Zoe, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Bye.
And James in on Kangaroo Island, wonderful Kangaroo Island. Hi, you moved from the US to South Australia as I think for oil exploration. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I was an oil explorationist in an office tower in Denver, and I've never agreed with American foreign policy. I wanted an adventure, and so I started looking for a job overseas. And I came to Australia at that time mainly because they spoke English, and I didn't want to take on a second language with a young family. And then 11 months later, my wife of 17 years left me for my best friend.
Oh. Ouch.
Yeah.
And you're across the other side of the world from everyone that you know.
Yes, and she took my 4-year-old back with her, with my consent. And the 15-year-old stayed with me, and things were very rocky for him, and he was back in the United States within a year after that. So I kept my job for a few years, long enough to realize I was really very bored with it, even though the company treated me extremely well. And a fellow that worked for me, a geologist, made a joke about me and called me Indiana James one day. And a year later, I dropped out, and I became the joke. And now I work as a sculptor on Kangaroo Island.
Oh.
I married the woman of my dreams.
So
I've been happily married for 17 years.
Oh.
She's also an artist. And we live on a remote property, and we make stuff every day, and we sell it. And that's our lives.
Oh, goodness. What a wonderful story. So much pain there, but so much pleasure as well. James, wonderful. Thank you.
You bet.
Good on you. Thanks. Hey, there you go. Open to chance, open that heart, I say. Ken in Sydney, you went to Brazil for lust, you say.
Completely.
Why not too? But you stayed on for many years.
Well, the lust continued whilst I was there. I just got back about a year and a half ago. But I miss it, and I've been back several times. So it's a wonderful place. And, lust, that is, I should qualify quickly, lust for the women, originally for their physiques. And then I discovered that they just weren't good-looking people, you know, because of the mix and the melting pot of society there, which just appealed to me. But then there were so many great intellectual and free-thinking women there. It's amazing. And they have a very interesting president now, which, she's doing very well. The country doing very well, but lust it was, I can tell you.
Well, a lust for many things by the sounds. Ken, thanks for that.
Okay.
Heather in Queensland, 42 houses.
Well, thank you, 42.
42 houses. You came from South Africa 14 years ago with two suitcases.
Yes, I've actually moved all my life, and it started off because my father used to move a lot, and I suppose it just sort of ended up that I ended up doing the same thing. I grew up in Zimbabwe and Zambia, and we moved in 1977, and that's from when I started counting houses I'd lived in, to South Africa. I went to boarding school at the age of 9, and my dad turned up at boarding school once and said, okay, we're moving to South Africa, pack your bags. And I didn't have a chance to say goodbye to my friends or anything, so up we left. And I lived in South Africa in a number of houses for about 20 years, until I went with my ex-husband to New Zealand, and we just packed our bags and we sold everything and we moved to New Zealand in the hope of getting a job. He got a job and I went back to South Africa for 2 years. In the interim, he went to Australia, and I decided that it was a very difficult period, actually, sort of making up my mind to go back to South Africa, because we had children together and having to take my kids away from their dad was a very difficult decision. So after 2 years back in South Africa, I spent the whole time trying to get jobs in Australia, where he had subsequently moved to. And I had these weird phone interviews for jobs in Australia where I had no clue about Australia. I'd been to Australia years before and gone to Sydney and Melbourne. And
but you landed here. How'd it work out?
Well, it was a terrible culture shock, because eventually I got a job here. I've no idea why. And I got a job in a place called Dareton, which is on the Murray River. It's opposite Mildura.
Okay.
And I'd lived in Cape Town, which is a very large, cosmopolitan, beautiful city. And I had sold everything again and had my two suitcases. My children stayed behind with my mom. And I flew over. And I remember I landed in Melbourne, and I remember sitting in this plane and looking out across the dead flat grey and thinking, oh my goodness gracious me, what on earth have I got myself into?
Look, we're coming to the end of the show. This sounds like a life of adventure, Heather.
Well, since then I ended up actually quite loving. I was desperately homesick for Cape Town, and then I ended up living in Ballina, and I was offered a job there, and I said to them, where is Ballina? So they said, it's near Byron Bay. So I said, oh, that's cool,
okay.
I'll move.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
A life of adventure. Thank you very much. I just want to quickly bring in another story if I can, and that's Kirsten Krauth. She's an editor and an author. She's recently made the move from the big smoke of Sydney to Castlemaine in Victoria. Welcome to the show. Wonderful place.
Hello, hello.
This is, I mean, in some sense, your work has allowed you the flexibility to move, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'm a freelance writer and editor, and I can pretty much work anywhere. I mean, I've got a mobile office, and that made that part of the decision quite easy.
But a key motivation, and I think this is an important point to squeeze into this show, for you with a young family, was the cost of living in Sydney.
Well, that's right. We've got two small children. We just had a couple of babies. And we were struggling to find a house to rent in Sydney that we could afford and in a place where we wanted to live as well. So I think when you have kids, you start sort of thinking 10, 20 years into the future, which you don't do when you don't have children. So we were sort of projecting a fair way ahead.
Yeah. And, you know, life in Castlemaine's a whole lot cheaper, although increasingly changing from what I've seen.
Yeah,
it's a very desirable location. I mean,
yeah.
But a really fantastic artistic community, and I guess you're really close to Melbourne, really.
Yeah, well, we're about an hour and a half by train or car. So, it's not a major distance. If you want to commute, you can. A lot of people do commute. My plan was not to commute because I wanted to concentrate on the writing, and that was a big focus for me.
But your hubby, who's a film producer, can still commute.
That's right, and he'll work on ads in Melbourne, and he'll go there for a couple of days during the week.
The thing is, you moved around a lot as a kid. Do you think that gave you a taste for moving? Sometimes it has the opposite effect.
Yeah, I think I like moving, and I dislike it as well. I think I'm caught in the middle. So I think I didn't want my kids to have to move around like I did. And I think that was a big factor in moving here and trying to settle before they went to school.
Yeah. It's a mindset, I wonder. And I wonder if the telecommuting rather than actual commuting, you know, we have that fantasy. But you seem to have made it a reality.
That's right. And I actually think social media makes moving a lot easier. I think because you kind of have your same conversations on Facebook that can kind of be your anchor. And I also met a lot of people in Castlemaine through Facebook. I made friends before I even got here. I had people, I had mothers, young mothers saying, you know, when you get here, let's meet at the park. And having that kind of idea that you're going to make friends, you know, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, look, that's a really powerful point, and that's a great piece of advice for people who land in a community. Get on Facebook and find the connections that way through different groups.
Yeah, Castlemaine actually has its own page called Castle Maniacs, and you can go on there and ask any question, and people are really quick to respond, and it's just fantastic.
This is really good to know. This is actually the very tangible, practical way that Facebook can facilitate real-world connections.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, good one. Congratulations. It's a wonderful part of the world. They have a great arts festival.
Yes.
Kirsten Crowth, thanks for joining us on Life Matters this morning.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Made the move. Because rent is too darn expensive in those capital cities, folks. Yes, indeed. Professor Richard Sweet, let's wrap.
Look... The economists have got a conventional explanation for why our labour force is so mobile, and it's the thing called employment protection. It's easy to fire, it's easy to hire. I reckon that there's another dimension, which is probably even more important, that's illustrated by the stories that we've heard this morning.
Yeah,
we're a nation of risk takers, we're a nation of migrants, we're a nation of travellers. So many of the people who rang in come from somewhere else in the world. So many of them have been somewhere else in the world. We're used to taking risks. We're used to changing our lives.
Yeah, that's right. This is our story.
Unlike other countries like Italy, for example.
Well, in some sense, maybe they don't need to. We're a long way from places, and we've got a long way to go to get places within our own country, don't we, I guess?
Yes, that's true.
Look, really terrific to have your analysis on the show this morning, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me, Natasha.
And also to have your personal story, which I think linked in very beautifully with a whole lot of listeners too. Professor Richard Sweet, he's a professorial fellow at the Graduate School of Education at the University of Melbourne, written a great paper a couple of years ago, The Mobile Worker Concepts, Issues, Implications, with the National Centre for Vocational Education. Well, that's it for us this week. It's been lovely being back in the chair, somewhat jet-lagged, but I'm getting there. Producer today, Lindy Rain, sound engineer Jen Parsonage, and to the whole team, Tracy Tromf, Siobhan Hunt, Gina McEwen, Jane Shields, and our executive producer, Julie Browning, of course, and me, Natasha Mitchell. Have a great weekend. Monday on the show, looking at ageing and our rights, some of those stereotypes, let's unpick them, but a whole lot more exciting stuff coming your way, including sex, I think. Yes, and why not too? Have a great weekend, won't you? Stay with Radio National now. Coming up to the news...